Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Now, many of you will have got to know journalist and former Sydney Rose Brianna Parkins as a columnist in the Irish Times magazine on a Saturday, and you may have enjoyed her take as an Australian observer on Irish life and culture, everything from serious topics like bodily autonomy to homesickness to who does the household chores. Well, Brianna has been living in Ireland for over 5 years, but as she recently announced in her column, she's leaving Ireland and heading back home to Australia. And just before she flew back to Sydney, Brianna came into studio and I began by asking her why she's leaving Ireland now.
It's a multifaceted question. I think most people go straight to arts or weather. She couldn't hack it. But it's a few reasons. But the main one is financial. And I know it's a bit grubby to talk about money, but money is important. You know, it really sets up your quality of life. And for us, in terms of wages versus housing affordability versus rent, and also healthcare is a big factor for me as well. I have a chronic health condition that is never going to go away, which is fine, but needs management. So for us, it just made sense to go back to Australia for a few years, at least. We hope, I think I still have this residual hope in my heart that somehow I'll work my way back to Ireland. But it just seems at the minute like life was such a struggle. It was a scrambling to, you know, cover the bills, try and save for a mortgage while paying rent, but also just the day-to-day grind of trying to get the healthcare I needed. You know, it's lots of phone calls. It's, well, this thing didn't get sent to this consultant, and then you've got to, you know, get the script to the pharmacy, but the pharmacy is short-stocked of the medication. So just my day-to-day life became such a grind that sort of got to the point at the end of winter, which is maybe when you shouldn't be making the best decisions. Yeah. And we just sort of like, look, we can't go on like this. Then I got offered a job and, yeah, we decided to leave.
And we'll come back to all of that. Just for our listeners, what is your health issue since you mentioned
it? Yeah, so I have ADHD, which is sort of a neurodevelopmental disorder. Well, it's funny. I don't really think it's going to be called a disorder in a few years' time. It's sort of thought that nearly 40% of the population might be some way neurodiverse, whether it's dyspraxia or autism or ADHD. It's sort of, you know, a big family of sort of things that share common things. And it just means that life's a little bit harder for me in some ways. I can do things others can't do, but also things that people find easy, like organizing their life, anything to do with executive functioning, I find difficult. And there's also some comorbidities with that. So anxiety can kind of play into part. I can kind of get really bad insomnia. I can have this weird thing where I faint and my blood pressure can go everywhere as well. They're all sort of interlinked. So that just needs a bit of management. And if I don't manage those things, my life becomes really unlivable and it becomes super miserable. So staying on top of that and having the resources to do that is really key for me.
Now, readers of your column will know about your tech worker boyfriend and you remind readers a lot of his culty credentials. Is he going with you?
He is. I'm packing him up with me. It's so funny because when I grew up in Australia to an Irish parent, we have this thing in my part of Sydney, which is a mostly immigrant community. So all my friends' parents were something. All of us were the firstborn Australian sort of generation. And we'd call our parents fobs, which means fresh off the boat. So if your parent did something, if my parents did something really Irish, something really diddly, I'd be like, oh God, they're just acting really fobby. And my boyfriend was packing up his suitcase and he had the old Galway County ribbon tied on top of the suitcase. And I was like, no, this is too fob for me. And I just was reliving my childhood trauma. It's like, it's my culture. And I was like, oh, actually, no, you're right. I have my own stuff dealing with that. But I've told him, I was like, look, you are not wearing a gar top on Bondi Beach. That's where I draw the line. You're going to have to assimilate beyond that. But he's really excited. He's already looked up which GA teams he's joining in Sydney. We have many. And he's really excited. He's more excited, I think, than I am about going. I know what I'll miss about Ireland. So I'm already grieving. I'm like pre-grieving almost. But he's just looking ahead, getting excited. I think maybe in a few years' time when that homesickness kicks in, he might feel a bit different. But for now, he's really excited.
And when you say you already know what you're going to miss about Ireland, what are you going to miss about Ireland?
I think that it all boils down to the people. This country's greatest strength is its people and its culture in terms of social interactions. It's that gentle, you know, minding each other, I think, and this sort of unspoken rule of soundness. and going out of your way to help others and be kind. I think that's a really integral part, and it flows down into all facets of life. And, you know, sometimes our systems don't work and it can be very dysfunctional in areas, but then someone will be like, I know my sister works at this hospital, or my sister works at this school, I'll see if she can get you a spot. And, you know, it all works on social connections. So I think the goodness of Irish people are the is the glue really that holds this country together in a lot of ways, and I will really miss that.
But is that significantly different to Australian people? I often wonder that, because people do say that about us Irish, but is it different, for instance, to what you know better, which is Australia?
Yeah, it's a funny one. So I would have grown up around the Sydney Irish community, which definitely does have a lot of that in it. But I would say Australians are very kind, I have to say, and social. But I think because their systems work so well, they don't have to mind each other, because like, oh, that's a government thing. Someone will sort that out. If you need a GP's appointment, you will get one the same day. You know, there's not that sort of necessary, they don't really need to look out for each other because they have this confidence that the government will handle it in some ways. So I think that's the missing thing. And also, I think I'm getting a bit of reverse culture shock when I go home, because I'm chatty, you know, I got used to chatting to people. You go to the shop, you're like, oh, how's your day going? How are you getting on? I do that in Sydney and people are like, what's wrong with this girl? Is she trying to rob us? Is she trying to distract us so she can shoplift? Like, they look at me with suspicion. So that's, you know, something I have to get used to going back.
Now, you write a lot brilliantly about your family, but tell us about your mum and dad and how they ended up in Australia.
Yeah, so my dad's Australian. My mum is Irish. My mum emigrated with her parents. They were actually flown over by a jewellery company. My grandfather was a metal polisher, sort of for like the fields of Australia, like a big jewellery chain. And so my granny always feels very posh. She's like, we came by plane, not by boat. And they were, you know, it was amazing back in the 60s and 70s. Mm. Australia needed migrants. It still does. Our economy is built on immigration. So they were given housing. They were given help to transition. They got like all these extra things. So, you know, I always find it funny when people talk about, you know, oh, the Irish in Australia had to pay their own way. I'm like, yeah, maybe now, but definitely back in the day, they were assisted a lot. And I'm grateful for that assistance, because it opened up opportunities to us. And the sort of sad parallels, you know, that I'm leaving for the same reason that my grandparents and my mum left, which is that we just didn't see a future in Ireland. So I think that's been hard to deal with, is the same reasons that people left, you know, 50, 60 years ago are the same reasons that young people are leaving today. So that was my parents. My dad and my mum met at a disco, which was very funny because my dad can't dance at all. And my parents have been together ever since. And yeah, my dad always talks about, he thought he was getting like, you know, this lovely Irish woman, which conjures up, you know, like red hair and plays the harp and softly spoken. But my mum's an inner city dub and just takes nothing off nobody. And they love each other and they're hilarious to get along. But my dad is like, Jesus, no one can sling an insult like an Irish woman, I tell you that. Like, our house was always a very funny house, a lot of cutting remarks. It was really enjoyable to grow up.
But you write also as well. I mean, you're proud of the fact you didn't grow up privileged. I mean, I think if you're right, you grew up kind of working class in Australia.
Yeah. I mean, I'm privileged in a lot of ways. I mean, I had my parents both worked. They were together. They weren't addicted to drugs. I couldn't say that for every other member of my primary school class or high school. So in a way, I felt really rich. I was like, oh man, we have two cars and we get McDonald's maybe like once a week. We are fancy. Went off to university, realized that was not the case. There was a whole level of privilege, which I couldn't even conceive. You know, I was working two jobs at 14, 9 months, and I worked two jobs through my leaving cert. And I just realized that there were people who didn't have to do that. And it just blew my mind. So it was funny. I grew up thinking that we were like, you know, doing quite well. But looking back, we were very working class. You know, I'm the first person in my family to finish high school, never mind go to university. And it's not because I happen to be the smartest person in my family. It's not the case at all. I just had the opportunity to go. And I had parents who valued higher education. So it's an interesting one. I often, you know, you kind of have this, I think a lot of working class kids have it, where you look back and go, God, I'm glad that I'm got to do these things, but you feel this guilt and sort of, you know, heartache for your parents and grandparents who didn't have the same opportunities.
And then getting to university, which was obviously huge, how did you then forge your career in journalism? Because there probably wasn't journalism in your family either.
No, I often say, I was like, you know, I remember you're saying that you wanted to be a journalist as a kid, where I'm from, was saying like you wanted to be an astronaut. People were like, yeah, of course. But what do you really want to do? Like, I remember my high school counselor, you know, being like, girls from Parramatta, which is where I'm from, don't become journalists. And she tried to get me to change my university courses into doing like a tech course in TAFE. She's like, why don't you learn to do like, you know, something about, you know, secretarial work for businesses or, you know, music management, and then you can get an admin job and work your way in. I was like, no, I'm going to study journalism at school. So it was really interesting. The first journalist I met was at university. I'd never seen them in the flesh. And my mentor happened to be another Irish woman who actually worked at RTE back in the day, Siobhan McHugh, at the University of Wollongong, who really pushed me. And she was a tough teacher. She'd make people cry sometimes in class. But I sort of knew her. I was like, she's just a dub. Just who used to break into song in class. And I understood her and she understood me. And she was the first person to really say, you are capable of this. So I'm really grateful. Without her, I don't know if I'd be here. So I just really got lucky in a lot of ways.
When you look back now on being the Sydney Rose and being involved in the Rose of Tralee, do you look back fondly on it?
Yeah, it's a weird one. I remember at the time I was working in the ABC, which is Australia's BBC, RTE, and I was working on a sort of a show that investigated other journalists, which was quite a serious show. And I remember my boss at the time telling me, he's like, this could be a real millstone around your neck career-wise. People might not take you seriously. And I was like, he doesn't know what he's on about. I'll show him. I'll break through sexism barriers. Because when you're young and you're a fearless young woman, you think, I'm going to change how the world works. Of course, it doesn't work. And I've sat in job interviews where people have brought it up. I remember going for a job that I was overqualified for, and this guy sat before me and said, you've actually got quite an impressive resume. Like, he was shocked. He's like, so what was the Rose of Tralee all about? And I just remember this rage bubbling up in me. But I was like, no, he's right. That is going to follow me. People do chronically, I think, underestimate people who do the Rose of Tralee. You know, we've seen the commentary around Maria Walsh after the election. And it's so funny because one of our most powerful senators in Australia, Deb O'Neill, is a former Sydney Rose as well. So to me, inside the organisation, it doesn't matter. But outside, I think people have a view of what you are and tend to underestimate you. But sometimes it's a good thing to be underestimated.
So how did you end up coming to live in Ireland? I'm thinking my listeners going, so why? Was it as a result of the Rose? And why did you come to live and work in Ireland?
People are really shocked. Every taxi driver I get is always like, why are you here? Like, I got on the wrong bus or something. Do you know what I mean? No, so I went, so after the Rose, obviously I on stage talked about advocating for a referendum on reproductive rights. And then 2 years later, the referendum was happening. I came back and campaigned for a month, just purely because I was like, well, I've got to put my money where my mouth is. But yeah, and then TV3 had a job opening, and TV3 back then, now Virgin Media. I did a debate, and then a producer said, hey, there's this job going, would you go for it at Island AM? Applied for the job, and then 2 months later I was in Dublin, and people thought I was insane for doing it. Believe it or not, I was trying to escape a housing crisis in Sydney, and I've come to Dublin.
And is part of the reason you're heading back the housing crisis or not?
It definitely is. And there's a housing crisis in Australia, which I'm sure people, your readers, will be quick to point out. And our houses are more expensive. Sydney's average house price is around 800,000 to 900,000 euros. But our lending rules are different. And the way you get a deposit together is very different. So it can be affordable. So your parents can unlock equity in their own house, for example. There are schemes that you only need 5% deposit. There's all kinds of ways of getting around it. And the wages are higher and the taxes are lower.
So how happy are your mother and father that you're going home?
So happy, Miriam, that they are letting me and my partner sleep in the same bed under their roof, which I was shocked at, right? So I grew up with an Irish Catholic mother, and I couldn't believe that like my hippie Australian friends were like staying in the same bed as their partners. But luckily I had like Lebanese and Italian and Greek friends whose parents were like mine, and was like absolutely no men in the house whatsoever. And my parents were like, oh, we've done up your old bedroom and we put a double bed in there. And I was like, oh my God, they must be really desperate to marry me off at this stage in my 30s. They want grandkids. Like, would you please not just, here, look, here you go. So that's how happy they are, I think. They're really excited to have us.
So nice. And that, you've written very movingly as well about, I mean, you missed all even the young people in your family. And do you mind mentioning your beautiful five-year-old nephew?
Yeah. My nephew, Anthony, who passed away, I want to say 18 months ago, 2 years ago. It's all just been a massive grief blur. So he was born perfectly healthy. He got a virus, which impacted his heart. It basically meant that his heart stopped growing with his body. And then we had to go on the transplant list for a while. He was like one when this was happening. He got the transplant and we thought we were in the clear. It was great. And then just one day he suddenly stopped breathing. His heart stopped working. We're still going through to reasons to find out why that happened. So it was just, you know, a complete wallop. It was one of those times where life really just upturns you because we thought we were in the clear. We'd been through the hard times. We'd been through him on essentially like a heart pump. Mm-hmm. We'd lived in hospitals for months and, you know, he was all set in the clear. So for my family to go through that was just, yeah, it's so cruel when a child dies. I know it's sad when anyone dies. I've been through grief with friends, and that kind of thing. But when a child dies, it completely throws off the everyday, your understanding of how the world works. Mm. So for me, it was anger. It was just not coping. And then you feel bad for feeling grief because my brother and my sister-in-law, you know, they're the chief grievers. So you feel like you have to lock up your own kind of stuff and just get along with it. So I felt, you know, not being a grandparent or a parent, being an auntie, I had to kind of keep it all together. And just for so long, I remember going to doctors and my body, I was throwing up every morning, couldn't hold food down, was like, something's going on. And I got all these tests. My GP was just like, Brianna, you're just grieving. A terrible thing has happened and you have to just grieve. And that was a big lesson for me, was you just have to sit with the sadness and let it have its way with you. And you'll come out the other side eventually, but you just have to be sad. Like, that was my life for a while.
And all the harder because you're the other side of the world.
Yeah, harder. I know, definitely harder because no one understood in my circle what was going on. Easier in some ways because I wasn't there and I wasn't going to the grave every weekend. So we start Christmas at the grave and we start Easter at the grave and birthdays, and that's normal for us. And that is hard when I go back to visit. I was like, God, actually, that would have been really hard for me to do. So in some ways, I missed out on some things. In other ways, it was easier.
Now, you're going back to a great job.
Yeah, I'm heading off to the ABC, back to Auntie, and I'll be on the 7 p.m. bulletin. So I've got to remember, I'm like, God, I'm going back to TV. I've got to actually get dressed every day again and look half decent rather than work from home.
But it's a great job.
Yeah, I'm really excited. A great government pensionable job. And I really love the ABC. You know, I'm a big fan of government broadcasting. You know, it has a special place in any democracy. I love the culture of government broadcasters. They're generally so committed to being fair because they're so judged on the outside. I love it all. So, yeah, really excited.
Will you keep up your Irish Times column?
Yes, I am keeping it up for as long as I can, as long as I meet the editorial. There's got a very strict rules around what ABC staff can and can't do. So as long as I'm on the right side of that and they're happy, I can keep it up.
Well, Brianna Parkins, it was so lovely to speak to you today. I wish you the very best of luck. What's your boyfriend's name again?
But yeah, his name is James and he is he culture fished me. He pretended that I didn't know he was such a big culture until we were in a relationship later on down the path. But he's great. I really couldn't have survived the grief without him. I think he's the best man I've ever met. I wouldn't be dragging him to Australia if he wasn't.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, look, Brianna Parkins, thank you so much for being my guest today. Safe journeys back home.
Thank you.
And I'll look forward to continuing to read your columns in the Irish Times.
No problems.